Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. It is Thursday, December 12th. My name is Rob Doster. I got Bobby Regan, the host of the Fundamentally Sound Podcast, back here with me to walk through everything that's happened in college basketball this week and to take a quick look at some of the biggest games this weekend. But before we get into it, I unfortunately have to report that since our last podcast, Regs has still not gotten a haircut. He has still not trimmed his beard. I don't think he's taken a shower since then. I very much think that he is a homeless man that has taken over the Reeves household. I pity your wife. I feel so bad for her right now. Just please, I am begging you. Look, dad to dad, you need to get out. You need to get a shower. You need to find something to do that forces you to clean yourself up. Because it's bad, man. Look,
I'm going to the Kentucky-Georgia Tech game on Saturday. So,
all right.
So yeah. I'll at least have like my beard will be trimmed. I shower at like 4 o'clock now these days because that's when my kids asleep and I can just wake up and I can run upstairs and shower. I did get hit yesterday by my wife with, so like I'm going with a buddy to the Kentucky Georgia Tech game, and she was like, "I have no problem with you going as long as you promise you get a haircut by Christmas."
look, you know what? The most important thing in life is to have friends that will tell you that like, bro, you got to get your shit together. And like, look, bro, you got to get your shit together.
I've just been sitting here. I mean, I look at it and just listen, I've said it before. I don't have a great set of hair. It's going in the back. This is my last run. This is senior year of high school. I'm dating the junior and college is coming, and it's where we're going to stay together, and we're having the one last run before I shave it all, and that's me leaving the college.
Well, listen, if there's anybody out there listening to this that has a good barber or knows of a good hairstylist at a salon, please DM me, DM Reeves, tweet us. Just let us know. We're in this together. I might sort of GoFundMe to get Reeves a makeover to make sure that he no longer looks like a homeless man while he's podcasting.
Look,
it's not for me. I'm doing it for your wife.
And the best is I'm wearing literally a free sweatshirt from 2003.
You are.
It's one of my most, like, I just refuse to get rid of it because it's so comfortable.
If I screenshot, like, the way we're doing this is recording, and we also have it going on FaceTime so we can tell, like, let each other know when we got something to say. If I screenshot what you look like right now, that I mean, I could hold a hood over your head for forever. But to be fair, actually, like, you got the hood up, so you look a little better today than you did last podcast.
I know. It's because I haven't showered yet today, and I was out last night. We went to dinner last night with friends, man. So my hair is even more of a mess.
Oh, man. All right. So Louisville, Texas Tech. Let's actually talk about basketball because I don't think anyone wants to. We went 3 minutes of me roasting Griggs, and I think that's probably enough. So. Well,
get ready, Louisville, Texas Tech fans, because we got about 3 minutes of roasting Louisville.
All right. So give me all your takes on that game. What are you coming away for people that don't know that have been living under a rock for the fourth time this season? Number one lost. It was the third time that they've lost as a ranked team. That lost to an unranked team. It was 70-57 in the Garden in the Jimmy V Classic. Texas Tech came in off of three losses. This was not necessary. Like, a lot of people, myself included, yourself included, thought that Louisville was just going to end up rolling over Texas Tech in this game. Texas Tech did not have their leading scorer, Jamias Ramsey. It was not pretty. Give me some takes, Riggs.
So what everyone said in the preseason is starting to come true of questioning Louisville's guard play or point guard play, especially. But to me, the bigger problem and Louisville's biggest problem isn't that. They don't have anybody that will consistently break down the defense off the dribble. Like Jordan Norwa. He's a hell of a player. He's an All-American, obviously, potential National Player of the Year, potential ACC Player of the Year. He gets his buckets kind of in rhythm of the offense, right? It's kind of through cuts. It's through the post and getting a kick out, or they post him up a little bit to take advantage of a mismatch. He doesn't consistently take the ball, go. He's not a, not, I don't consider him like a playmaker. And against Texas Tech's defense, which limits the court, they want to kind of split it in half, has some pack line principles. You need somebody that can just go get a bucket and break down the guys. And it looked like they just kept waiting for it, kept waiting for it, kept waiting for it. And instead, Nora just felt like he was settling for long range jumpers because he was frustrated. That's the biggest problem. They don't have anybody that they can just say, here, go from the wing, from the guard, attack, break somebody down off the dribble, and just create a play.
So I think that this year, more than any other season, we are going to have games get won strictly based off of matchup.
Yep.
And based off of how games are coached and the game plans that teams have going in. And I think that is a good thing for Texas Tech because, in my mind, their coaching staff scouts and game plans as well or better than anybody in college basketball. And what they did against Louisville, I thought was just brilliant and fascinating and a little bit different and kind of gives you the tutorial for how to beat Louisville moving forward this season, although I don't know if everyone is able to do it. And there were two things that really stood out to me. The first is that whenever Louisville tried to make that first pass to get into their offense, they just denied, and did not let them make that pass. And where Louisville wants to make it most often is it's called like a horn set, which is just think about the offense in a triangle, and you basically have two guys kind of right near the elbow that you want to get the ball to. And Texas Tech just didn't let them get it there. So if you remember in the second half, all those instances where like Darius Perry picked up his dribble 40 feet from the rim and had nowhere to go with it, it's because he's trying to make that first pass to get them into their offense, and Texas Tech would not let them get that pass. So that's one thing that they did. They just took Louisville out of their offensive sets. The other thing was Louisville, and I swear to God, this is actually a thing, Riggs. I'm going to say a term to you, and I think you've probably heard it, and I promise you guys listening, this is an actual term, but Louisville does something like they run a lot of butt screens. And is basically a high ball screen where the screener, instead of facing the ball handler, is facing the basket. And there's things that you can do out of it that are a little bit different. That's a little nerdy for this specific discussion. But basically, like, that's one way that Louisville gets into their offense. And all Texas Tech did was they switched the butt screen and they did not allow Steve Enoch to get the ball in the post. They fronted him. They forced the ball over the top and they got all the steals whenever the lob pass would get thrown there. And what this did essentially was took Louisville out of anything that they wanted to run offensively, which puts them in this situation where you don't get points and you don't get shots out of the offense that you run. And to your point, Louisville doesn't have anybody that can go out and that can make a play on their own. Like, so much of what they do offensively comes out of the fact that Chris Mack is like really good when it comes to X's and O's, yeah. And Luke Murray is really good at scheming offense. And that's just a good coaching staff offensively. But when you have a staff that is willing to sell out to take you out of what you want to do offensively, like what Texas Tech did, Louisville's, they're fucked. They don't have anything that they can do. So, yes.
Not only that, but I was talking about this with Mike Rutherford, who covers Louisville, and we both kind of came to the conclusion at the same time without realizing it. You look at the numbers, and it looks like Louisville's a good three-point shooting team. They have three shooters. Everyone else sucks. It's Nora, Enoch, and McMahon. Everyone else is shooting. No one else is shooting higher than 26% from three. And guess what? When you're frustrating the hell out of Nora and he's kicking it to Darius Perry had zero confidence. That, 19-minute mark in the second half, he called a wide open kick out from like the wing, maybe a little bit closer to top of key for a wide open three, and he just didn't shoot it. Okay, well, what's going to happen when they play other top defenses? Like, they still have to play good teams. They still have to go to Kentucky. They had the ACC schedule. There is like way too much they need to get figured out from that side, from a mental aspect, and from just somebody needs to turn into a damn playmaker for them. That's the biggest thing.
Yep, and I think another part of it is that Louisville, like, they just kind of played soft.
Yeah,
and I think that there are some guys on that team that tend to be that way. Like, I don't think when you look at Texas Tech, that is a team of like toughness is kind of permeates that roster. And I don't know if we necessarily have that on this Louisville basketball team. Like, that's just not kind of, and that's not necessarily criticism. Like, you don't have to be kind of like that quote unquote, that dog to win basketball games, But Louisville definitely does not have that ingrained in them in the same way.
Not only that, but when something goes wrong, and you saw it against Texas Tech, you were there. It was very evident on TV. I don't know if it was evident where you were sitting on in media row, but they just started sulking. Like Jordan Norro, especially when he got frustrated, his shoulders just slumped and his head was down and he just stopped really caring. You could see in timeouts and just kind of walking. It's like, you're still in this game. Like, you're the number one team in the country playing against a team that, let's be honest, Texas Tech's offense this year is not something to write home about, especially without Ramsey there, who's kind of their leading scorer. Yeah, Chris Clark's turning into something. Moretti can shoot the ball. Like, they have some, but it's not – they don't have Jarrett Culver. They don't have everyone they had last year. So you're in this game. All it takes was a quick 8-0 run, and guess what? Now the number one team in the country cut the lead to 2 or whatever. Instead, they sulked. They packed it up, and they just said, here, you kicked their ass.
Yeah, I don't know if it was – I don't think I would term it sulking. I think I would term it they were very obviously frustrated.
Defeated.
And they're
defeated.
And they, yeah. And they didn't know how to kind of get around it just because there was no – like they were never able to actually get anything going. Like it felt like there was one point in the second half when Jordan Warr got like 3 layups at the rim right away, which you could tell was schemed by Chris Mack. He's like, all right, we don't have anybody going. We need our best player to get out here and take this game over. First 3 things they do is get him buckets at the rim and like, all right, he's getting it going. And then on the very next possession, he comes down. And I think that he's being guarded by – I can't remember who was guarding him. But he hit him with an in-and-out dribble, crossed him over, behind the back, step back. He puts up a 3
yep.
that, like, goes in and spins around and then comes out. If that shot goes in instead of spinning out, maybe we're talking about something different because it felt like that was kind of the shot that Jordan needed to get going a little bit. But honestly, we can sit here and we can talk about Louisville. And I think that this was more about Texas Tech and what they did. And I want to give credit to them more than I want to take credit away from Louisville. Like the point guard situation with Louisville is going to be a problem. I think I know that the staff thinks that can be answered if David Johnson comes along. He's coming off of like an invasive shoulder surgery. He is right now kind of bad.
Yeah.
He looks a little out of shape. He looks a little slow. He's a freshman. He didn't play for 4 months because, like I said, he had invasive shoulder surgery. But it's very clear to me, and I don't know if it's clear to you, Darius Perry's not the answer and Fresh Kimball's not the answer.
No. And, like, you have Fresh Kimball, who played off the ball last year. He's trying to get back to a traditional point guard role. His turnover percentage rate is skyrocketing. Darius Perry, same thing. They both have, like, a plus – I think they're both over 26% turnover rate. One's at 30, one's at 26. I forget who's where.
That's not good, Reeves. That's not good.
And then, then you're relying on Ryan McMahon, who, he is who he is. He's all the credit in the world to him. He's gotten better. He's turned himself into an ACC type caliber player, but he's not a point guard. He's a spot up shooter. It's like Florida trying to turn Lee Humphrey into Torian Green back in the day.
And it's, what a reference,
right? Like, because that's what it kind of reminds me of. Where you're like, Lee Humphrey can be like a secondary ball handler, but he's not a point guard, and that's what Ryan McMahon is. I don't want to take anything away from Texas Tech because it did show like, hey, they still can go out and win these games. But the bigger takeaway is Louisville is just like every other team in the country. We thought they were the clear number one, which they were fine. I had no problem. I ranked them number one. No problem in the world with that. But the gap from 1 to 40 is the same. And that's what Louisville showed.
Yeah. You know, it's – point guard play is going to – it's kind of an issue with a lot of these good teams. And I think we talked about this on the last podcast, but if you look at every team that won a national title in this decade, they had – with the exception of the Kentucky team that had the top 2 picks in the draft in Anthony Davis and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, every one of them basically started 2 point guards for the last 10 national champions. So that's a concern for Louisville. That's a concern for Ohio State a little bit as well. But before we get in that, I want to talk about this Texas Tech team and this Texas Tech story because, I was able to catch up with Chris Beard a little bit. It was me and Nat Norlander kind of cornered him outside of the locker room.
What a deal to corner him.
Yeah, I know, right? And it was very funny because I don't know if you've ever had a chance to talk to him, but Beard is like a very laid back guy, but he's also like just kind of awkward and kind of goofy and kind of weird, especially when he knows he's in like a formal interview on the record setting.
Yeah. And he's not doing fireside chat.
Yeah. And I don't know if he actually, like I've gone out to the Hooters with Chris Beard before. I've gone out for drinks with him before. I've definitely hung out with him like multiple times. And I don't know if he really put together who I was because he was just kind of in that zone. It was pretty funny. But one of the things that he said was, and something that I think that I certainly overlooked, and that I'm sure that everybody overlooked, is that yes, they came in on a 3-game losing streak, but two of those losses were in overtime.
Yeah.
One of those losses was a 1-possession game with like a 1:30 left. If they get, I think his direct quote was, we get a bucket here, we get a rebound there, all of a sudden we're coming into this game with one loss or undefeated, but you know how it goes. He said, Prince today, frog tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's a pretty good way to say it. And
the DePaul game, they lost because Moretti missed his only free throw he's missed the entire year.
Yes.
You're all of a sudden it's on a one, you're not on a 3-game losing streak, and you're probably still ranked.
Yeah. So they're very close. And this is the point that he said he drove home to his team, is that we're the same team that we were at the start of the year. We're 2 shots and 2 rebounds away from being a top 10 basketball team and still ranked top 10. And all of a sudden this entire situation has a different narrative. What did you make of Avery Benson? I did not see the broadcast. I've not rewatched the game. Were they making as big of a deal out of him as it kind of like for me, like that was the story watching the game, is that this kid that's a walk on. And I'll talk about that the Texas Tech like staff and players don't like when you just refer to him as a walk on. Yeah, but was that a thing during the game?
No, I mean, they like talked about how he kind of turned into this guy. They didn't really spend too much time on it. It was kind of more, honestly, it was more just talking about how Texas Tech was just taking everything away from Louisville. And it was just more about Texas Tech as a whole. And when he had like the block at the end of the half, I think they kind of said something. Then afterwards, Holly Rowe had him for the post-game interview. That kind of was more his time when they kind of let Avery Benson talk a little bit more and kind of talk about him a little bit more. But yeah, during the game, it was a lot of Billis making fun of the refs for calling too many charges, especially early on. And then it was just talking about Texas Tech as a whole.
Yeah. He hates charges as much as I do. So he's going to hate watching Texas Tech play. So the thing about Avery Benson, and this spiel is going to take like a couple minutes, but I love the story of this kid. So he was the first player that Chris Beard ever offered a scholarship to as a Division I head coach. And it's because he was playing with the Arkansas Wings team, the program that produced Malik Monk and the program that produced Daniel Gafford. They're EYBL. They won a lot of games.
Was Portis from there?
No, I don't know if he was from there. If he was, it was years earlier. Okay. But so he's at an EYBL game at Peach Jam, and Avery Benson, this skinny white kid with a buzz cut on the Arkansas Wings, goes diving for a loose ball, knocks out 3 teeth, blood all over the place, and doesn't come out of the game. He gets up, he wipes off the blood, he gets the teeth, and he's like, no, I'm not coming out. I'm good to get its teeth. Like, I'm fine. Let's go. Let's play. And Beard said he saw that happen. He looked over to his assistant at the time, Wes Flanagan, and was like, offer that kid a scholarship right now. And the relationship kind of continued, and right now he is a walk-on at Texas Tech. He is a preferred walk-on, which means that he is a guy that was recruited to be a walk-on, but he's paying his own way to go to school. Like he told me he works for a road construction crew in the summer, and that he is this is my favorite part. He called himself the hay guy, as in like anytime that they need something done, it's like, hey Avery, come over here and fix that trailer, or hey Avery, come over here and patch that hole or fix that pothole.
I'm surprised it was that, because like, I read your story on him, and I read that quote, and I was surprised it wasn't more like, hey, Avery, go to Dunkin' Donuts and pick us up like a 12-pack of donuts and some coffee, and really sure, just really being an intern.
I'm sure that's like part of what he does as well. Maybe he was just trying to talk himself up a little bit.
But it's a crazy – it's also the most crispier Texas Tech, Northwest Arkansas thing in the world, of him offering a scholarship to a kid who – snapped his teeth out diving for a loose ball.
Well, I mean, yeah, but that's also the point and kind of the why he's so important to this Texas Tech team. Because another thing that Chris Beard said that I thought was fascinating is he thought getting Avery Benson back, because after the national title game, literally the next day, Avery came into his office and Chris thought he was going to talk about transferring, because he is like, he had offers to go to kind of like mid-major programs. He was recruited a little bit by some high majors. I don't know if they necessarily, if he had committable offers, but he was definitely, he's not just some guy. You know, right. He's not just a walk-on that tried out and got put on the team because he looks good at the end of the bench. Like, he's a legitimate Division I basketball player. And so Beard thought he was at risk of maybe losing that kid to a transfer. Beard is – he's very open with players pursuing a new opportunity if that's something that they feel like they need. So he thought that there was a chance he could lose him. And he said Avery came in and was like, nah, coach, I'm good. I'm staying the course. This is where I want to be. And he was like, that was one of the most important things that happened to our program, because Avery brings the culture. Like, he's the guy that brings the toughness. He's the guy that sets the tone. He's the guy that provides that leadership. And when you have so many new pieces coming in year after year, you need that kind of consistency and someone that is going to set the example for what you expect at Texas Tech. And the other thing that's interesting about it is, so assistant coach Brian Berg, like, I went up to him and I was talking with him and I kept saying, like, this walk on or this walk on or this walk on. And he's like, look, I respect you and I know why you have to call him a walk on, but he ain't a walk on. He's a player. And like, I know Berg a little bit, and I thought, like, he kind of wanted to, you know, kick me in the nuts right there when I said that. And when I asked Avery about it, he's like, yeah, you know, I don't get treated like a walk-on. I don't get called a walk-on. Walk-on is not actually in our dictionary of words that we use. And it kind of sets, like, so to your point, what you said, like, this epitomizes Texas Tech because it's just some blue-collar guy coming out here and outperforming everybody. But the reality is, like, Texas Tech, they've had a ton of pros and they have one of the best coaches in college basketball, and they have plenty of talent and older veterans. And, you know, even last year they brought in grad transfers, Matt Mooney and Tariq Owens, who are both going to play in the NBA. So it's not like this is just a team of some ragtag dudes from nowhere, Texas, that are out here kicking everyone's ass. No, they got pros and one of the best coaches in college basketball running things. What Avery represents is that everybody is kind of on the same plane when you go to Texas Tech, and whether it is, you know, the manager that is setting up the speaker in the locker room, to the preferred walk-on with, like, the long hair and the tats, to the guy that's going to play in the NBA on the roster, Jamias Ramsey, everybody has a job to do. Everybody's expected to do their job as hard as they can, as well as they can. And it doesn't matter what your label is. We are all in this together. We are all a team. We are all on a level playing field. Let's go out there and get those W's. And I think that's what Avery represents.
Yeah, I mean, the perfect example was that video that Goodman posted of them in the locker room celebrating. First off, Beard, I don't know if that was dancing. It turned into punching. He was at some, like, death metal concert there, it looks like. And then
he was moshing. That's what it was.
It was something. He looked like my uncle at my wedding. 9 bourbons in, like, all of a sudden shout came on. But then when Avery walks in, like, he's obviously coming in last because he's doing the post game interview. The entire team stops, looks at him, and lifts him up, and, like, crowd surfs him, and you can just tell, like, hey, we appreciate hit. Like, this is our guy. As much as, instead of being like, this is a walk-on, okay, it's a good story, whatever. You know, some teams you don't see that. It's business, so to speak, whatever. But now at Texas Tech, you can definitely tell just in that video. My takeaway was, no, they actually love this kid.
Yeah, they he's one, like, it's not like he's not their mascot. He's like one of the leaders in that locker room. He's one of the most important pieces they have. And they were celebrating the fact that the kid finally got his moment. And last Avery Benson story, and then we could talk a little bit about Chris Beard. At the 2018 Elite Eight, I covered that, and Avery was a redshirt walk-on, and since he was redshirting, he could travel with the team, but he wasn't allowed to be on the bench. Like, he couldn't get a court pass because you're only allowed to have a certain number of court passes for players, and when you're a redshirt, there's certain things you can't do. So he, instead of being with the team that he practiced with every single day, he was literally sitting directly behind me on press row with a freaking cowboy hat and cowboy boots. And after they won in the Sweet 16, I think it was they beat Purdue.
Yeah.
The Caleb Swanigan team. He wasn't allowed on the court. So what the team did is they came running over to make sure they went and had a chance to celebrate it with him, and, like, kind of flooded press row and were standing right in front of me. And I'm, like, in the middle of this, and I got this walk on with a beard and a cowboy hat and cowboy boots standing behind me, and the entire team right in front of me just absolutely going nuts. And I forget what song it was they were playing. It wasn't Old Town Road, because Old Town Road became their song the next year. I can't remember what it was. But they were, like, singing the song and jumping around and dancing. And I was just like, I fucking love this team. I love everything about this team. I would love to play for them. But that to me, that more than what happened last night, that kind of shows how they feel, because it was a redshirt walk-on, right, and they made sure that they got over to the side of the court so they could celebrate with him to make sure that everybody on that team was included.
Yeah, one of those like, hey, we don't need to wait for the locker room. We're going to run to you.
Yep. So where do you stand? Let me ask you this. If you were – let's say that you just launched a brand new program and you're a high major and you're in, I don't know, some power conference, and you have to pick one guy to launch your program from scratch, who are you picking? To me, there are five guys that are actually deserve to be in this conversation, I think there are three that I would actually make a pick from.
Yeah, so I think the guys, like the pool that I would consider would be Tony Bennett, Jay Wright. I'd throw Calipari in there just because of how well he can recruit and win right, and sell right away. Painter. I said Bennett, right? Yep. Beard and Holtman. So I have six in my what would be in my pool.
You missed one.
Who did I miss?
Chris Mack.
Yeah, Mack, seven.
So for me,
who would you have out? Because you said you had five.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't have Cal or Jay Wright in there just because it's not anything of how well they can coach. It's just I think that when you're starting at someplace new, you need somebody with a little bit more energy and a little bit younger. That's so fair. I mean, they're two of the best coaches in college basketball, but if I'm launching a brand new program, there are really only three guys that I would target. It would be Chris Mack. It would be Chris Holtman, and it would be Chris Beard.
Yeah. I mean, that's all
Bill fair. Self, I would put in that conversation as well. Obviously Tony Bennett, just because, I mean, he's Tony Bennett and the things that he's done, but I would probably go with Chris Beard because nobody in college basketball here's a stat for you. And this kind of blew my mind. All right. So when he was at Little Rock, he won, I think it was 31 games, which was an Arkansas Little Rock school record. And it was a Sun Belt conference record. And he did it with 10 new guys. He completely rehauled everything in that program for the 1 year. Since he's been gone, I think they've won more than 15 games in a season. And I think they're averaging like 10 wins per season. Before he got there, they never won more than like 18 games in a season in the 6 years before he got there. So he went to like just some whatever program in the Sun Belt, won 30 games, beat Purdue in the NCAA tournament, and then bounced. And it's not like he was going to, I don't know, like Murray State, where they had a certain level of expectation, right, or something like that. He went to Little Rock, yeah, won 30 games, won a game in the NCAA tournament, beat Purdue. And then left, beat Purdue. So like that kind of sums up what he can do when he goes to a place.
Yeah, I think in order, I think I would go Mac 1, Beer 2, Holtman 3. And it's close, but like I think I would give the slight tiebreaker to Mac just because he has proven it for a little longer, like longevity. Well,
yeah, my thing is, and it's I close. Love Chris Mack and I love Holtman, but they've kind of done it at places that are established.
That's
right?
That's like, the debate. Like,
yeah, Mack took over at Xavier for Sean Miller, who already had that thing rolling, and Xavier, like that program kind of runs itself. Like I think. Let me make sure I say this the right way. There's a reason why all of these coaches have left there and continue to have success, but that Xavier program is kind of it kind of runs itself. Like, yeah, you don't have to be an elite coach to have success there. They just happen to have had elite coaches come through.
No, you need the coach to come in and destroy. You need like the Billy Gillespie to come in and just tear it down.
Yeah.
That's the only way that Xavier doesn't consistently be like a top 40 team in the country.
Yeah. So Chris Mack went from there to Louisville, which is like a top 10 job in the country. And that's not to, I'm not diminishing what he's done. And like, I think he's, like I said, he's one of the three coaches that would start it, but he's never proven he could take something from scratch and turn it into like a 31 team in the Sun Belt. Right. Fair. Chris Holtman took like, yes, he was the interim at Butler, but that was like a pretty good. Yeah. Kind of structured, and I know the year before they were not very good, right? But it's not like he walked into a completely barren closet and did something that was entirely unexpected or unprecedented. And then Ohio State, again, top 10 job. Chris Beard did it at Little Rock and is now doing it at Texas Tech. The things that he's doing at these programs, no one's ever done it before. No one won 30 games at Little Rock before. No one got to the second round of the NCAA tournament by beating Purdue at Little Rock before. Nobody made it to the Elite Eight at Texas Tech before. And not only did he make it to the Elite Eight 1 year, he would have, if Keenan Evans doesn't break his toe, he would have won the Big 12 that season. He won the Big 12 last year. He made it to the Elite Eight again. Then he made it to the Final Four. Then he made it to the national title game. Nobody's ever done this stuff at Texas Tech. So if I'm starting somewhere new and I need a guy that's going to do something that's never been done before, I'm going to get the guy that's done something that's never been done before.
And it's close. Like I said, you can't go wrong with any of them. I would put Beard over Holtman for sure, because Beard is probably the best salesman out of that group in terms of selling the program to the fans. Because he does like the fireside chat. He does like the, hey, if we win this game, I'll come officiate your wedding. He does all that stuff that I think gets the fan base riled up the most out of the three. But you can't go wrong with either three of them. Like that's got to be the three.
That's a good decision to be making.
Right. Yeah. Hey, I'm going to go. Let's go start this college right now.
So I guess last thing is, where do you stand now on Texas Tech? And then we can move on. Like, where do you view them? Are you back to where you were in the preseason?
Yeah. I mean, they're kind of still where I think they are. They're somewhere in that 15 to 35 range of teams. I don't think they are as high as people were in preseason on them. But the fact that they do have Beard, who, like, we just spent all this time talking about, can get them to that top 15 type team. But from a talent perspective, like, there are some issues. You know, I don't know what their ceiling is, but it's such a weird year. I'd put them somewhere in that 15 to 35 range. And if they're playing in the second weekend, I'm not going to be surprised.
Yeah, that's kind of where I stand. I think that Kansas is very much the clear-cut best team in that conference. And so I am
I don't think it's clear-cut. I think Baylor's right up there with them. I love that Baylor roster.
I don't know, man. Now that Kansas has embraced the idea of playing small, I think Kansas is very, very good and very, very dangerous. And I can understand, like, I'm going to have Ohio State number one on Monday just because I think that they've earned that respect. I can make a very strong argument for why Kansas should be the number one team in college.
Let me hear the argument, because I don't think there is one.
Because Kansas could be the best team in college basketball. If you think that Kansas is a better basketball team than Ohio State, which is something that you can very much make the argument for, then you can have them number one. It doesn't mean that if you're ranking based off of who is the best instead of based off of what their NCAA tournament resume looks like, Ohio State right now unquestionably should be the number one overall seed if we're seeding the tournament right now. There's no argument to make against that. But you're going to try to tell me in a year where four number one teams have lost that the team that you want to rank number one is unquestionably the best team in college basketball? That's what you're going to do.
Right
is that
now,
what you're going to do right?
Because guess what? They don't have a loss. And they're beating ranked teams by 25 points. Kansas is losing to a team that loses to Stephen F. Austin.
True.
That's the biggest thing. Ohio State hasn't lost.
But that came in a game where they learned that they can't play the way that they wanted to play. And yes, I understand that they lost that game. They lost by 2 points to a team that is a top 10 team in college basketball that also owns a 20-point win in East Lansing at Michigan State. So you can sit here and you can quibble, but you can say, and yes, they lost to Stephen F. Austin, but that is still a good Duke team, right? They lost by two possessions. And how often, let me ask you this then. If Duke and Kansas play 10 times, how many times does Duke win that game?
I don't know. It's
3.5, 4, maybe. So that was the one. If you're saying that Kansas is a better team because they win 65% of the time, then maybe that was one of the 35% of the times. How often is Kansas going to have 28 turnovers in a game? And so if you want to make that argument,
I think almost every time they play Ohio State. Ohio State's defense is better than Duke's.
Which team has elite point guard play?
Which team has more versatility and depth?
Which team is built the way – well, first of all, I think Kansas certainly has more versatility because they can play with two bigs. They can also play with three guards with three wings.
You can play Kyle Young and West out there. Yeah, Kyle Young and West.
Fair enough. So who has the better point guard play? We just talked about how
– Kansas is better. Kansas is Devin Dotson, but – I will take this Ohio State team over Kansas every day of the week right now. And probably as the season goes on.
Every day of the week.
Every day of the week. Because guess what?
You think
Kansas turns the ball over a ton still. They can still stretch out Udeka Azubuike, who still is not a great perimeter defender as much as he's improved and as much as conditioning he's done. They still can go small and match up with Kansas when they run Moss at the four or whatever. And I think Chris Holtman's a better coach right now than Bill Self, X's and O's, and he can pregame plan a four better.
Maybe. Maybe, but you're acting like in a year where every single team that's been number one has lost within 2 weeks. You made the same argument for Louisville last week, and how does that look now?
Like, don't,
all I'm saying, I'm going to have Ohio State number one.
You should.
And I think that they probably deserve to be I think they're probably the best team in college basketball. But if you're telling me there's no argument to make that the team that has a first team All-American at the point in Devin Dotson, who, by the way, is averaging 20 points and 6 assists, with the most unstoppable force in Udoka Azubuike at the five, and then they put Isaiah Moss and Ochai Agbaji and Marcus Garrett and Tristan Annarunna and all these shooters around them, if you're telling me that you can't make an argument that that Kansas team is the best team in college basketball, then you're just posturing. That's all it is.
Ohio State,
you know, wouldn't go to overtime. What's happened? You've let the homeless man take over.
Ohio State wouldn't go to overtime with Dayton.
I don't know if that's true, but that's because I love Dayton. That's a different conversation for a different day. So changing gears, another team in the Big Ten. Michigan lost for the second time in 3 games. They lost at Illinois. How worried are you about the Wolverines?
Again, I think it's just kind of like we're seeing water find its level, right? Like, they shot so damn well through Atlantis and the beginning of the season, where they're shooting like, what, 50% as a team from 3 or something absurd like that.
It was wild.
And now water's starting to find its level. Teams are getting the scouting report of don't leave the shooters, because they're still good shooters, so you don't want to leave them wide open. But hey, cut off Xavier Simpson. John Teske's going to pick and pop, and just start daring them to beat you with Simpson having to go downhill. And again, we're seeing they've hit what, 3 3-pointers each of the last 2 games. That they've lost. And so, like, again, so
real quick, in their wins, they're shooting 42% from 3. And 42. In their 2 losses, they are 6-4, 37 from 3.
And yeah, so it's. They're fine. Like, they're a good team, but water's finding its level. I think they are a top 15 team, and I think they'll be there just because of I do like the roster. I do kind of like how it all fits, and they are good shooters and everything like that. But again, it's why there's 30 games in the regular season or whatever it is.
This is when Juwan Howard proves his coaching chops to me, because he went out and he found a way to play that let them win. And that was basically just put Xavier Simpson on high ball screens with people help, kick the ball out, have guys shoot 40% from 3. Now what teams are doing, and shout out to Robbie Hummel, who was on the broadcast last night, who pointed this out, who really kind of brought it to my attention, is that they're just not leaving those shooters.
Right.
And they're basically saying, look, you want to play 2-on-2 with John Teske and Xavier Simpson against our 2-on-2 or against our 2 defenders, we're going to let you do that. Because we don't think that they're good enough to beat us consistently. And that's one thing that happened. And part of the reason they were able to blow out Iowa is because, like, look, Luka Garza, he's awesome. I love the kid. He plays hard. I saw him play when he was high school as a freshman, and he looked like he couldn't even run up and down the court. And so now, like, I have a special soft spot in my heart for him. Not a guy that's very good defensively. And I think we kind of saw that in that game. So, and the other point that I think has to get made, 2 losses, true road games.
Yeah. And
that's going to happen. Like, look, that is going to happen a lot this season, where we're going to sit here and we're going to overreact and we're going to say, oh, this team is bad because they just lost on the road, blah, 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 blah. Well, they were actually underdogs. So technically the favorite won.
Yeah.
Technically, this wasn't an upset.
No, it sure wasn't.
When it comes to highly ranked teams losing to unranked teams, I refer to it as an upset just because it's easier to say it that way. But I get it. The team that was favored won that game. And I think, at least this is just my opinion, I think that home courts are worth, what, like 3.5 or 4 points. So if you are less than a – yeah, if you're less than like a – if you're like a 3-point favorite and you're unranked and you beat a ranked team at home, then I still kind of consider that an upset because the better team won, even if you were favored to win.
Yeah, again, I'm not that worried about Michigan long term. They've had a hell of a schedule, and it's getting tougher too, having to play Oregon on Saturday. So again, it's just kind of a war of attrition, get into the Big Ten play and see when they can kind of figure it out, because they'll have at least a bye game playing Wisconsin.
Yeah, I want to see what I see what you did there. I want to see what their next what their adjustment is, because everyone's got to make an adjustment at some point, and I'll be fascinated to see what Juwan Howard ends up doing. This is going to be a little bit off topic and something completely different, but I've started rolling out some all-decade content, and I put together the 10 best teams of the decade, and I'll rattle them off for you guys really quick. Number 10 for me was 2013 Louisville, the team that had Russ Smith and Peyton Siva that technically doesn't exist. Number 9 was 2011 Ohio State, Jared Sullinger's freshman year, the team that had Aaron Kraft, David Leidy, William Buford, and John Diebler that lost in the Sweet 16 to Kentucky. Number 8 was 2015 Wisconsin, the team that ended Kentucky's 38-0 run. Number 7 was the team that won the title in 2015, Duke. Number 6 was the 2012 North Carolina team that lost Kendall Marshall to a broken wrist in the tournament. Number 5 was 2010 Kentucky, John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, all of them. Number 4 was last year's Virginia team. Number 3 was 2012 Kentucky, Anthony Davis, Kid Gilchrist, all those guys. Number 2, 2015 Kentucky. This is where I've gotten the most pushback, is I had the team that went 38-0 at number 2, and then I had 2018 Villanova at number 1. So what is your biggest argument or complaint, or what do you think I got the most wrong?
Yeah, I don't think 18 Nova is the best team. I think there is a clear top three, and you have the top three teams correct, just not in the correct order. I think there is a gap from 12 Kentucky, 15 Kentucky, 18 Nova to the rest of the group. I would just have, I think 2012 Kentucky is the best team of the decade. Here's the thing. You look at it, Nova lost to two sub 50 teams based on KenPom. Kentucky's two losses were top 20 teams, top 10 Indiana on the road at the buzzer, and Vandy in the SEC championship game, who was at number 19 in the country. I think you have to kind of take that into consideration. If you want to look at, like, if you're doing hypothetical matchups, I like the way that 2012 Kentucky matches up against 2018 Nova to kind of take away what they do offensively. I think Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, it's just too good of a defender against Mikal Bridges. Obviously, Anthony Davis might be the best defender that we've seen in the decade.
He would definitely take away Omar Spellman. Yeah. That is for sure.
So I would go 12 Kentucky, 15 Kentucky, 18 Nova, and then a big gap from to 4 to 10.
Yeah, that's fair. I think you could put any of those top three teams in any order and have the argument be justifiable. My thing with that Villanova team is, they only lost two games when they were at full health. They basically had a six-man rotation that season. And in the loss to St. John's and the loss to Providence, they were without two of those guys. One of them was like a surprise because Eric Pascal ended up getting a concussion out of nowhere. So they only lost two games when they had all six of their like main guys healthy. And the other two losses that they took, one was on the road at Butler when Butler shot 15 for 22 from three.
They always
the
lose other one at was, Butler.
Yeah, they always lose at Butler. And the other one was at Creighton in overtime when Creighton shot 12 for 29 from three. So sometimes things happen when teams make a lot of threes against you. And that's just kind of where I stood. But that team basically had six pros on it. They had the national All-American at the point. They were so difficult to guard because of how many guys they had that could shoot and pull people away from the basket. The one argument that makes me regret not having 2015 Kentucky at number one is the idea that, like, if they don't lose to Wisconsin in the Final Four and they go 40-0, like, there's no argument against it.
They're the best team of all time, not even the
decade. Yeah. So am I really saying that a team that lost just because they lost one game to a team that I have at number seven on this list, that they're not the number one team of all time? And so that's the one where I'm like, you know what, maybe I messed this up a little bit. But I, you know, that Villanova team, they were a top 10 team defensively. They were the most efficient offense that we've seen in the KenPom era. They had the highest raw points per possession of any team that we've seen in the KenPom era. So I just, it's hard for me to get my mind around.
I agree that Nova team has the best offense we've seen this decade and probably even further back. But I think the two best defensive teams we've seen, actually, I don't know if that's true because you can throw in some Virginia teams, but those Kentucky teams were just so special defensively. When you look at Anthony Davis and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, and even Terrence Jones was a rim protector. And then you look at the 15 team where they had Willie Cauley-Stein and Carl Anthony Towns. Just, you know, good luck scoring in the lane against those guys. So it's one of those, just what do you value? And I don't know. Like, if you're, again, I use a little bit of hypothetical matchups and just what I saw. And like I said, I don't think there's a huge gap from 1 to 3 and then a big gap from 3 to 4. But I would go, I think 12 Kentucky is the best team I've seen this decade.
Do you know who the best, in terms of points per possession and raw efficiency, do you know who the best defensive team of the decade is? Well, it's the best defensive team of the KenPom era.
It has to be one of the Virginia teams.
Nope.
No?
Last year's Texas Tech team.
Okay, that makes sense.
Do you know who number two is?
Texas Tech from 2 years ago?
No, 2013 Louisville.
Oh, yeah, okay.
The one with Russ Smith and Peyton Siever.
Kind of weird that they're that high. But, I mean, it makes sense. Like, they're good defensive.
Because they forced so many turnovers, yeah. And they had Gorgie Jang at the rim to kind of erase everything. And, yeah, Montrezl Harrell. He actually came off the bench for that team, yeah. Which I had totally forgotten about. Was there anybody that I didn't have in the top 10 that you thought has to be in the top 10?
I feel like almost one of those Arizona teams should have been – I don't think you had them for honorable mention even. Like the team with Brandon Ashley, they probably were favorites to win the title until he broke his foot.
Yep.
And it's like if you're going to have that 2012 UNC team as high as it did, I'd probably put Arizona as an honorable mention.
They were close. They were one of the teams that were under consideration for me. The hardest one for me to leave off
was the Gonzaga teams.
2017 Gonzaga, yeah. I had under consideration, but they didn't make the cut at the end for me. It was 2010 Duke. And the reason I say that is because they won, I believe they won the ACC regular season title. They won the ACC tournament title, and then they won the national title. And what you might not realize is they actually had six NBA players on that team. And that does not include John Shire, who was a first team All-American as a senior that year, who had an eye injury that ended up ending his basketball career after, like, I think he only played 1 year, maybe 2 years of pro ball because of what happened to his eye. And if he doesn't injure that eye, I'm convinced that he makes an NBA roster at some point.
Honestly,
so I'm going to call him. Go ahead.
I'll say, honestly, another team that could possibly be on there, that 2010 Purdue team was damn good until Robbie got hurt.
Yeah, they were really good too. But it's hard to
– It's hard because you're doing the what ifs and the hypotheticals at that point.
And when you don't – like the thing about the 2012 North Carolina team is we saw them go toe-to-toe with Kentucky in Rupp. And then I believe they won – let me just double-check on what they actually won. I believe that they won the – yeah, they won the ACC regular season title that season. So they proved themselves throughout the course of the year. They just happened to have a little bit of bad luck with Kendall Marshall's wrist. All right, now let's talk about the all-decade team in terms of players. And my player of the decade, can you guess who it is?
Zion.
Dougie McBuckets.
Because he's a three-time first-team All-American?
Three-time first-team All-American. So how about that? I got his accomplishments written down. He left Creighton as the fifth best scorer in Division I history, scoring 3,150 points. He's the first player in 29 years to be named a first-team AP All-American for three consecutive seasons. He is one of just three players in the history of men's basketball to score 3,000 points and get 1,000 rebounds, and he owns an NCAA record by scoring in double figures in 135 games. He only played in 145 college basketball games.
Yeah, I get it. Like, it's a career-type thing, too. Again, it depends what you're arguing. Like, if you're asking me who's the best college basketball player we saw, I'd probably say Zion or Anthony Davis out of that group that you have.
Yep. I have them both on my first team with Jalen Brunson and Kemba Walker.
Yeah, I would agree with that. My only complaint would be if you're having Doug McDermott as your player of the decade for what he did for his career, I think Jimmer needs to be on first team for the same type of reason.
Well, here's the problem. Jimmer only had two seasons in the decade.
Oh, that's true. I forgot you didn't roll it over.
Yeah. So he's on my second team. Yeah. It kind of came down to between him and Kemba.
And the title.
And you just can't overlook the fact
the title.
That Kemba led UConn, a UConn team that had like a whole bunch of freshmen and no one else, to five straight wins in five straight days at the Garden to win the Big East tournament title. And then 3 days later, started out the NCAA tournament and then obviously went and won that NCAA tournament. So he won 11 straight games in March and put that team on his back. And here's the wildest part about that. He didn't win a single National Player of the Year award. Not one. There are six National Player of the Year awards in college basketball. Every single one of them went to Jimmer Fredette.
That's true. And then when Shabazz won his title, he didn't even win Conference Player of the Year.
Didn't win anything either.
It was three first-team All-Americans from the American Conference. And I think Russ won Conference Player of the Year, or Sean Kilpatrick, one of the two, did it.
To be fair, he didn't deserve National Player of the Year that year. Not until he won the national title. Right. Because that was a bad UConn team.
Yeah.
They were not good.
That's actually one of my biggest complaints, is the misconception of the Kemba team. They were a three seed. It's not like they were a surprise. Like, they were only a surprise because people expect one seeds to win every year. We're talking about a top 12 team in the country, theoretically, by seeding. They won the title. And it's not like it came out of nowhere. Again, they were a three seed.
They were a three seed because they went out and they won five games in the Big East tournament. They were the nine seed. They played the first game in the Big East tournament. Look, Riggs, I don't know how many Big East tournaments you've been to, but when you play that noon game, the 9-16 game at noon on a Tuesday in Madison Square Garden, it is empty. There is nobody in there. I remember going there once, and it was DePaul against South Florida.
You mean South Florida doesn't travel well?
And I was like the only person in there. There were no fans. There were more people sitting on the bench and sitting on press row and operating the game than there were in Madison Square Garden. I could have yelled from the very last seat, and whoever was coaching that, I don't even know who was coaching South Florida or DePaul that year, they could have heard me. If I was in the very last row, it was empty. And that's the game that the national champions were playing in that year.
Yeah. It's always my complaint where people are like, well, that UConn run from the NCAA tournament. It's like, well, they were a three seed. The seven seed run, I talk about that one all day because that was wild.
All right. So my all-decade second team was Jimmer, John Wall, Buddy Hield, Jaron Sullinger, and Frank Kaminsky. My all-decade third team, Shabazz Napier, Trey Burke, Frank Mason, Evan Turner, and Denzel Valentine. And low-key, Evan Turner had one of the best basketball seasons we've ever seen as a junior. He turned in a season where he averaged 20 points, 9.2 boards, and 6 assists, despite the fact that he literally broke his back in December. He was out for – he was supposed to be out for 2 months. He was only out for 1 month. He came back, and after they lost their first two games in Big Ten play, they went 14-2 when he came back. They won the Big Ten regular season title that year. They won the Big Ten tournament title that year.
That was the year.
And he averaged 20 points, 9 boards, and 6 assists with a broken back.
That's ridiculous. That's the year he won NPOY over John Wall, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Deservedly.
That was, he had a good year. Great year, obviously. I don't have a problem. I'm trying to think, like, anybody that kind of left out. I would have Draymond. I feel like Draymond needs to be on there, but I just don't know where he fits.
He was the hardest guy for me to not put on there, but I don't know, like, who do you take off for him? There's no one obvious that you can take off.
And honestly, like, Jahlil Okafor deserves to be on there. Didn't Okafor have a better year than Burke? That's kind of the debate for me.
Well, Burke was the national player of the year that year, came back for a sophomore season, was the guy that they ran everything through, and to me was the reason that Michigan was as good as they were that season. Whereas with Jahlil Okafor,
he was the favorite to win it until Kaminsky came on late.
Well, yeah, and then Kaminsky was like was unbelievable. Yeah. I don't even think that it was an argument by the end. But the big thing with him is like his defense almost derailed their season. The reason why they didn't win anything other than the national title is because he was such a liability on that end of the floor. And so that was the thing that held me off for him was, yes, he was awesome. Yes, I loved the way that he played. Yes, I loved everything that he could do for Duke. But there were very clear flaws in his game that almost cost them.
And then a low-key one that I don't think people talk about enough that I don't know. Again, I don't know the spot for him. Malcolm Brogdon.
Yeah, I have him I did another one called like the all legacy team.
Oh yeah.
For guys that kind of changed the course of their team's history and their team's programs. And Malcolm Brogdon is on that list. And you know, I'm even more convinced that he deserved to be on that list after diving deep into the numbers. That is up on the NBCSports.com website right now. I'm going to let you guys go up there and read it and find it. Try to deliver a little bit of traffic, get a little bit of clicks. You know how that goes. So last thing we got, Riggs, before we get out of here is that we're going to talk a little bit about the games coming up this weekend. It's actually like kind of low key, a good weekend for college basketball. We have four really good games on Saturday. And the first one we're going to talk about is the first one of the day. That'll be Oregon at Michigan. As always, remember, we're recording this on a Thursday afternoon. So we're basing this off of what the KenPom projections are. And right now the KenPom projections have Michigan favored by 3 points at home with a total of 137.
This is going to be a hell of a game because you have Oregon traveling to Michigan. Michigan desperately needs a win now after losing to Louisville and to Illinois. What's weird is like the teams actually match up pretty well. Like Oregon's biggest strength is their offense this year, not their defense in terms of efficiency. Michigan has a top 20 defense. I don't think that Oregon will kill Michigan from an offensive standpoint, like we saw Illinois do with two bigs. Like it's, they want to play through with Peyton Pritchard and everything like that. Xavier Simpson, I will take that matchup, I think, at least to a draw, because of what Simpson can bring defensively. I think I'm going to go Michigan here just because they desperately need it. It's at home.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am on it too. I think that Oregon actually matches up really well with them because of the – they haven't been playing it in – like solely been playing that zone, but I do think that the matchup zone they play can really do numbers on the way that Michigan wants to run their offense and what they can do on that end of the floor. So I'm a little bit worried about that. I'll be very interested to see what Juwan Howard schemes up offensively and what kind of adjustments he makes, because I think this is the perfect example of a game and a team where some changes need to be made based off of what they normally do. But coming home after losing on the road in Oregon's first game of the season, where a West Coast team is playing at a 12 o'clock tip,
yeah.
I think I lean Michigan. And I would also – I'm probably going to be on the under there.
Yeah, I'd probably go the under. My only fear is that Oregon gives up a ton of looks from three. And if it's one of those games where Michigan, if they win, they're going to shoot 42% from there.
Well, here's the thing. It's because of their zone why they give up so many –
but if and that's,
they're like, it's like Syracuse. Remember, like the best Syracuse defensive teams, they gave up so many threes because that's what their zone kind of forced you into. But the reason why they were so good defensively was because you were not taking good threes. So I think that's kind of the situation. If Michigan's able to execute what they want to do offensively, then I think that's probably less than ideal for Oregon. Because then they're getting good threes. I have a tough time seeing them get good threes. So I'm kind of the mindset that I think the under is the play here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hate that.
All right, let's move on. We have Memphis against Tennessee, which was supposed to be like the last game in the series. It looks like they're kind of softening up on either side, which is good because these two, they got to play each other every single year. The last time that they played, do you remember what happened?
Yeah, a guy pooped behind the concession stand.
Yeah, you pooped behind a Dippin' Dots. If you have a game that is so intense that a guy gets so drunk that he takes a dump behind a Dippin' Dots, then you cannot let that game die. So please, I am begging you, Rick Barnes, Penny Hardaway, I know you guys listen to this podcast. Don't let this rivalry die. We need a game where guys poop behind Dippin' Dots.
And his quote was, "The line was too long and I had to go." Credit to him. He found a solution. That's a problem solver.
Look, man, I'm not going to lie. I've been there before where you're kind of rushing and you have a little bit of an emergency. I've never pooped behind a Dippin' Dots stand, but I have, like, on runs at the beach, there have been times where I've had to, like, duck behind a tree and fire one out. It happens, man.
I've never done that
in a basketball game.
I know.
All right, so this line is Tennessee minus six. The total is 142. How do you feel about this, Riggs?
I kind of like the over because Memphis is just going to push. They're going to push tempo, and I think they can get a little – they're one of two things are going to happen. They're going to get super sloppy with the ball when they push tempo, giving Tennessee a ton of free points. Then Memphis is chasing, and I think they get to the number. Or Memphis pushes and dominates tempo and is getting buckets because Tennessee turns the ball over a ton. Memphis forces turnovers. I think it's going to be a faster game than expected. I kind of like the over here because I don't know what side to be on just because it's a rivalry game. I kind of want to take the points, but it's on the road. I'll go over.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I don't want to have money on this game because betting rivalry games is always difficult. If I was forced to choose a side, I would probably be on Tennessee's side just because I think that they have the athleticism. And they have the toughness, and like they're not going to be intimidated by anything that that Memphis does. So I kind of lean towards the Tennessee side, but I also like the thing about it. Is this the first true road game for Memphis? I believe it's the first true road game, right?
No, because they played the
they played at UAB.
Yeah,
they played at UAB. It wasn't a road for Oregon. It wasn't a road game. Yeah, they were just playing in Portland.
Yeah.
So I think that you're right in saying that the over is the bet here, but I would I would probably lean towards Tennessee just because I think they have the athletes in the like Lamont Turner ain't getting intimidated by anybody on his roster.
No,
doesn't matter. That doesn't matter who it is. Like, he's just not the type to be intimidated. And I think he kind of sets a tone for that team.
Yeah. Like I said, I think you're going to see a ton of up and down though. I think you see it's going to be a lot of turnovers.
Yeah. So if you want to have action on this game, the recommendation is take the over, don't bet a side. But if you need to bet a side, if you're one of those people that's got to bet a side, you know what I would probably do? I would probably do something like parlay the Tennessee winning with the over,
yeah,
and just see what kind of odds you can get on that. It depends on what the line is, and depends on what the juice is if you're going to be able to get something out of it. But that's something definitely to look at. The best game of the weekend happens at 10 o'clock on Saturday night. It's Gonzaga at Arizona. Where do you fall on that, Riggs?
You almost
have- real quick. Arizona's favored by 3, totals 151.
You almost have to bet the over, right? Like, these teams are going to...
Take me through the theory.
These teams are just going to fly up and down. Like, there's just so many possessions. And both teams shoot the ball really well. Both teams are good defensively with the potential to be great. They do slow you down defensively, but they're average. I just don't want to be on the side either way here, too, because Arizona, a little bit banged up. They're coming off they played a nobody in between Baylor and this game. Gonzaga has played okay. Like, they got UNC coming up. Are they? I don't know if it's a look ahead spot, but they do have that to worry about.
It's definitely not a look ahead spot.
No, but it's just one of those they've got to worry about. I just feel like the over has to be the play. Like, they're just going to be so many damn possessions.
Yeah, and I think the total is going to open up a little bit higher.
Yeah,
than 151.
Probably been like 155 and a half, something like that.
Yeah, the one thing that does concern me is that what Gonzaga wants to do is kind of run the ball through their posts. Like, they are very much a like post-centric offense, whether it is Killian Tilly or Philip Petrushev or whoever. And Arizona is fifth nationally in two-point field goal percentage defense. Yeah. And some of that is because Sean Miller is a pack line coach. So he kind of double teams the post. That's one of the things that they do. And part of it is because Zeke Nagy is big and kind of can change some shots. And some of it is just because they've been playing against teams that have been overmatched athletically and that can't finish in the paint. And Gonzaga is not a team that is overmatched athletically in the paint. So I don't know how that's going to end up working out. I do know that Zeke Nagy, like, if you put him in ball screens, he's been something of a train wreck. So that's definitely something to kind of keep in mind in this. But yeah, I think I like the over too, man.
Yeah.
I think that's the play.
I just hope it gets bet down. If it gets bet up, I'll probably bet the under.
If it gets bet up, I probably will just stay away. Assuming that Arizona is healthy, what side are you going to be on?
I want to say Arizona. Again, it's a home game. It's like, and this year we talked about it earlier in the podcast. Home court is so important.
Yeah. What do you think the line's going to open up at, if you had to guess?
Arizona -4.
-4.
I think they add a point. I'd get another point from home court.
Yeah, I think it'll be like 4.5 or so. If it gets up to like 5.5 or 6, then I think I'm going to be on Gonzaga.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be on them there. All right, last one we got. BYU against Utah State. I think that's technically at a neutral site. Am I reading that correctly?
Yes.
I'm
assuming where the Jazz play. Vivint Smart Home Arena.
Yep. Which is, I mean, Logan is like 30 minutes from that, and BYU is like right there too. So it's not like they're really driving all that far. It's all those cities in Utah are all kind of like right in the same little stretch. So where are you leaning on that one? The line is Utah State is favored by 1 in a game with the total at 147.
So it's interesting because BYU has Yoli Childs back. Utah State is bringing back Kata's playing, right? I'm assuming Kata's playing.
Namish Keita played in their last game against Division I competition, but he only played 10 minutes. And then they played St. Catherine, which is just some like shitty little small school, on, I don't know, some point in the last week. And neither Sam Merrill or Namish Keita played, but like whatever. So I'm assuming that he will play, but that's, I don't know how effective he's going to be. I don't know how many minutes he's going to play. He's still dealing with that knee injury that he suffered playing at the Euros this summer.
I think I'm going to go BYU. Yoli Childs being back. They have the Halls kid. They have Toulson. They have experience there. I think they kind of match up well. It's going to be whoever controls tempo, and I just think BYU can control tempo a little bit. Plus, Mark Pope, they've challenged themselves already this season.
Yeah, the one thing that I am worried about is that in the first game Yoli Childs played, he had a whole bunch of cramps, and I think they were playing Utah, and it was on the road, so keep that in mind. But he had cramps. Yoli Childs had to come out and couldn't really play down the stretch, and BYU ended up blowing the lead and losing at Utah. So this is another rivalry game, in-state rivalries. I love that Utah's doing this, by the way, all those programs play each other. I think Utah, BYU, Utah State, and I think if when Weber State is good, I'd even throw them in the mix. I'd love to just see like a round robin or like a four-team event like what
Indiana does.
Like what Indiana
every does. Every state needs that. Like I know Ohio's been in discussions about trying to do it with Ohio State, Dayton.
You can't do it with every state because there aren't necessarily enough big games. But having like Gonzaga play Washington and having Memphis play Tennessee and getting like – Dayton and Ohio State playing each other. Like those are things that need to happen.
Xavier and Dayton need to play each other again.
Look, get a round robin going with those four Ohio schools.
Holtman's been trying to do that. And I remember my dad went to Wake, and he would always say when he was in college, they did it in Greensboro where NC State, Wake, UNC, and Duke would play the Tobacco Road Classic, and it was a doubleheader. Do that just because it's a cool – just different.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't because of the ACC scheduling and stuff. You can't do it.
But now. They were all in the ACC in the 80s.
Yeah, but then it becomes like a neutral site game. So what are you going to do? You can't do it now.
Florida and Georgia play football on a neutral site every year.
Did they really?
They play in Jacksonville every year.
That's not a neutral site. That's Jacksonville, Florida.
It's a new. It's literally the halfway point between Athens and Tallahassee.
Is it really? Yeah.
World's largest cocktail party.
It shows you how much I actually pay attention to college football. I would probably lean BYU here for the same reasons that you mentioned. I would just be a little bit nervous. I don't feel great about it, but that's probably the way that and Utah State has had some issues with veteran teams this season. Like they struggle with North Texas and some of the teams that are a little bit older that know how to execute and play the way that they want to play is definitely something to keep in mind.
Right.
So we are, let me get the list up here. We are both on were you on Michigan?
Michigan over in Tennessee, Memphis.
Yeah. So I would take Oregon plus the points against Michigan, but I'm going to be on the under there, I think is the best bet. I would probably lean Tennessee, in that game. And I think the over is the best bet. I would probably lean BYU. And then I would lean, it depends on what the line is for Gonzaga, Arizona, but I think the over again is the bet.
Right.
Anything you disagree with?
I'd be on Michigan over Oregon.
Oh, that's because you like losing money.
I know.
Anyway, Riggs, I appreciate the time, man. It was good catching up. As always, you can find him on Twitter at Barstool Riggs. You can listen to his podcast called the Fundamentally Sound Podcast anywhere that podcasts are given away for absolutely free. So after you subscribe, rate and review this podcast, go to his, find it, rate it, review it, subscribe to it, listen to it, do all those things, make us happy as podcasters. And we will catch up with you guys again on Monday morning for the Monday Overreaction Podcast. Riggs, happy betting.
Yeah, have a good one.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.